This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the More Than Just Code podcast. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
And once again, for this special episode, we have Josh Rock in Phoenix, Arizona.
How you doing?
On the Vision Pro. And we have Peter Whitham on the, he's in Hearst, Texas, by the way. And he's on the IRL Pro.
That's it. Hello, folks.
Yeah, no, I was just going to ask Peter just before we started going here, where in, because I know Texas is huge, right?
Yes.
Where in Texas is Hearst, Texas?
Actually, it's very easy. So if anyone knows where the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport is, I'm exceptionally close to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Nice.
It's right around Grapevine, Texas, probably.
Or absolutely,
depending where.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, slightly southeast of there. Yeah. Southwest. Sorry. Oh, my God. Southwest. Yeah.
And as you may or may not know, Jaime Lopez Jr. is from, El Paso, Texas.
Yes.
El Paso.
So, yeah.
Clear on the other side.
Yes.
Clear on the other side. If you were, in London, it's probably like an Edinburgh, just given the scale of the United States. I don't know if that's true or not, but, it's...
That's a good analogy. Cool. I thought you were going to say something like, Cornwall to London or, what's on the east of England now?
You could do what? Norwich?
Yeah. I mean, they're relatively close together. They're closer together than they are to Edinburgh, right?
Yes. So.
It's not exactly close. It's not like, San Antonio or Austin or.
But now I'm Houston. Thinking, I like to think that Jaime's in Cornwall, Texas. That's even better. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. He's over by the water, by the edge there. Yeah. Because I guess, relatively speaking, he is on the, is that the west side, right? Of Texas?
Yes, the western point. It kind of looks like it's, pointing one direction. It's the western tip.
It's the bit trying to get out, right?
All right, another part of the escape from Mexico. All right. Well, we're here once again to talk. I went back through our notes. We started this podcast in 2014 in August, so we missed that first WWDC. So our first WWDC was 2015. So this is technically what our 11th WWDC we're covering, Jaime. What do you think?
It's kind of nuts to think about it, right? Swift would have been a mere babe at that point. So many things are different now. I think the way that this WWDC went in its focus on technology was very different. Even than last year, and I think certainly compared to 11 years ago.
Yeah. Now, I had just joined Ray Wunderlich at the time, and they had decided... I joined in August of that year, just after 360 iDev, and they had decided by that time they were only going to do Swift from now on, which didn't really work because, I think probably for about 3 or 4 years after that, people were still doing Objective-C. But there we are. So I guess the first thing we can take off the plate is the secret unrevealed name of the new macOS, which... They've kind of broken with, I don't know if they ever had a tradition. They had cats for a while, and they had...
Yeah, well, that's when they started.
They had a surf place at one point, Maverick, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, now it's the theme is locations Yosemite in California. And,
Okay.
Mavericks, they joked about weeds.
Yes.
So Golden Gate, is it a park or is it a bridge? I mean, it's a bridge,
I believe so.
Right?
Yep.
Probably both.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Come on.
Actually, yes, probably. It does. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And the Golden Gate Park is on the
Golden
south
Gate
side,
Park. That's where Kirk and Company landed their bird of prey, wasn't it?
Cool. And the Muirwoods are right. Yeah, and I was going to say that the Ewoks live on the north end of the bridge, right? In the Muirwoods, right near the Muirwoods, where they filmed Return of the Jedi.
I'll take your word for it. Is this the Ewoks movies, like the Ewoks Adventure?
This is Return of the Jedi.
This is
the geography part of the show, right? We'll talk about the weather in a little bit, too. So macOS Golden Gate, I mean, does it roll off the tongue?
No, It's a terrible name. Yeah.
It's okay. I think I was joking that it should be, you know, like a Snow Leopard release. Tim, I think you combined that and said Snow Tahoe was kind
of... No, it's Snow Siri is what this release is.
There you go.
To that. Yeah. Snow Siri.
Yeah.
In fact, somebody... A colleague from work pinged me. He retired, but he said he watched the keynote yesterday and said it reminds me of 2024. And he's right, because that's when they promised, that's what they announced, the AI or the Apple intelligence, right? And it would be coming soon to a computer near you. Well, here we are 2 years later, and it's still coming soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. To everything near you. Yes.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like the Golden Gate name because... I feel like there should always be something you can just say and it sounds cool.
Right.
Mac OS Golden Gate just doesn't have a ring to it, for, in my opinion, you know.
Or we'll say, are you running Golden Gate, right? Because we used to say, are you running Lion or Tiger?
Yeah,
or,
exactly. Yeah.
Or Bears, right?
You're running GG.
I'll be honest.
We just called it GG.
I forgot about the name between Monday and now. So when you said Golden Gate, it took me a moment to remember, like, oh, Mac OS 27. Yeah, yes, yes. right.
Well, that's going to take a minute to sort of get used to saying 27 instead of 26, right? Mm-hmm. But, well, speaking of that, just as a quick segue from, I think this was in the State of the Union, that now you can, instead of having to go through and say, you know, if available, you know, iOS 12 and tvOS 4, and now you can just say all OSs because they're all 27 or they're all 26, right? Technically, I guess.
Yeah, you avoid the repetitive stuff. It's at available any Apple OS 27.0, the star, etc. Avoids repetition. So that's a nice quality of life thing. It is one of the things that I said... Man, I can't believe they just didn't do that from the beginning, but I'm not going to complain. Right. My paper, you know, paper was cutting me, and now it's no longer cutting me. So I'm like, that's an improvement. It's directionally correct.
Yeah. I think it's great because what a pain to have to type that out every time, right? And then have to think about the numbers. So it is nice to just, you know. I did notice, I think it will only work as far back as 26 for obvious reasons, which left me wondering, so if I want to do one of the previous ones
the way you do
I
now.
Would just still specify that version number, right? So like 16 dot whatever.
I don't tend to do that. I don't know, maybe because I don't really get, I guess this is if you're supporting older OSs and you need to have a new feature or whatever, but I mean, I just tend to do things like, you know, if OS, Vision OS, I'll do this. If it's Mac OS, I'll do that, right, kind of thing. Because I've been using the multi-platform app development model that they, I guess, they introduced 2-3 years ago to build everything, because eventually everything ends up on Vision OS with me, right? So, if it can.
I was going to say, now that I think about it, someone please put a library on GitHub to alias these things so you can just reference body parts. If wrist, if head, if hand, right? Yeah,
well, that's a similar idea. Cool. All right. Well, so what were your impressions of the keynote in general? Like, we had, I think, just really quickly to cover it all off in one fell swoop, we had a bunch of new design elements. I think they backtracked and forward tracked a bit of the liquid glass stuff. Then they went down the path of kid safety as well as and then they think they wrapped it up with improvements in Siri and tie-ins with Google Gemini. And I think the idea that some of this AI stuff is going to come to us free without having to have a developer account with Anthropic or whoever. So let's dig into some of the backtracking on the liquid glass effects, right? Like the one thing that, you know, if you didn't like liquid glass, the only choice you had was to go in accessibility and turn on the not visually disturbing button, right? Whatever it's called. Now you have a slider, and I was listening to MKBHD this morning, or he said that you can go from like sort of cloudy to like even more transparent, which nobody asked for.
Yeah, I'll take this one because I don't know if I've ever expressed my opinions on glass. Maybe I have. I was very happy to see the slider. And yes, for me, it's very much the, okay, great. I'm going to put it on fully tinted, leave it there. And that's the best I can do. Because actually, I always do the accessibility trick because You guys that have been hanging out in our regular places, yes, as you know, I'm not a Glass fan. So I'm glad that they saw sense and realized, you know what, maybe all those people didn't like it after all, you know.
But, I mean, it's such, the thing about the accessibility switch, it's such a trade-off. I mean, I like liquid glass enough to not want to go into the accessibility setting and do that. I might use the slider, you know, in the same way that I use slightly larger fonts. I don't go all in on big fonts, but I do use the that particular feature. And, of course, I support dynamic type in my apps whenever I can, right? So does that mean we need to support dynamic
liquid glass? Let that stay a system setting.
I hope not. Yeah.
Supposedly, you get it for free.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a weird one. You can sort of tell that it's like, you know, an apology letter because, like, there's one person, like, you can just point to Alan Dye, right, who left to go to Meta. If you believe all of the reporting, it's like he was the one that people said, this isn't going to work, dude, it sucks, like, stop. And he had enough weight. And he made Glass happen as it happened during Dub last year and mildly changed during the beta. But, you know, now it's like, do you want it to be terrible? Or I guess, you know, more terrible, just sort of make it more obvious. Or like good mode, which I think is what they would ship if they didn't have to.
Yeah.
Completely, you know, other folks have mentioned this, it's not unique to me, of like in a Steve Jobs era, you might have had him say, like, you know what, we messed up, here's what we're doing, ignore the past. Tim Cook era Apple will try to massage this. So let's see when, you know, new guy steps up, John Ternus, what his model, because, you know, Tim Cook did not run it the way that Steve Jobs did. And I do not expect John Ternus to run things coming September 1 the way that Tim Cook did.
Yeah.
Even though Cook's still around, right? Like, it's a very different situation. But it's like, hey, you know what? He's not going to do what? I don't know. He's not going to say good morning. He's going to have like his Star Trek captain. Like, I want to see pretty things fly at my face or whatever it is that Tig Notaro says.
I'm just hoping he doesn't like, okay, you know what? Let's now do the J.J. Abrams lens flare on the UI. Yeah. Let's just put that, yeah.
On everything, yeah, for sure. Yeah, and the other thing, as an artist, speaking of artists that you just mentioned, I kind of like the whole idea of putting a little bit of sharp edge on the app icons. I mean, they gave us this kind of really cool Icon Composer app, which, by the way, doesn't work on VisionOS yet.
Oh.
You know, somebody hit the cymbal or the sad trombone or whatever. You know, as an artist, I design my icons the way I want them to look. Sometimes I want a flat icon. Sometimes I want a little bit of skeuomorphism. But them deciding to put a little bit of what we call unsharp mask on it kind of like defeats the purpose of letting me design the way the app, the icon, the way I want it to look. I mean, they kind of forced our hand with, and I've spoken to people online about who've accidentally used the Icon Composer and then not liked the effect because they wanted a flat icon, right? They didn't want a sort of, you know, bubbled up, plasticky looking inflated icon. But yeah, it's weird that they're now, I guess, making, again, it's another compromise in terms of visibility, in terms of how liquid glass looks. But apparently, like, from the UI, UX people I speak to, it breaks all the rules about how things are supposed to look on a device and a page or web or what have you.
So, Tim, now is the time, right? And I don't know what the Canadian equivalent is. I'm going to go with an American. You know, you would tell people, like, call your senator. There must be some sort of equivalent in Canada. I don't know your government's layout. And so submit your feedbacks now, because while this thing is still baking over the summer, now is the time to get exactly what you just said, with all sorts of pictures and reproductions of, like, see this issue? This is what you may not have considered for what I want to do with my, you know, iconography.
In Canada, the opposition would get up and say, when is this prime minister going to stop this, you know, ridiculous, unsharp masking of our icons and get on with flat icons the way the artist intended it? That's what he would say. And then our current prime minister might actually get rid of that just to have him be quiet. Then that guy will go off and pick something else. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting how last year with Liquid Glass and the 26 releases, there was this kind of resurgence of feelings that happened with iOS 7 and the big flattening and everybody hating the design and everything. And how this year I feel we actually have more of the liquidness in the liquid glass than we did last year, for one. Then two, the calls last year of, oh man, it was so nice when we had Aqua. Wasn't that so great? But the things that they showed on Monday, where you've got some more outlining on the bubbles, and it really feels like the glass actually has more depth. It's almost like, are we getting back to Aqua? Because that would be kind of cool. But it's some of the hard turnarounds, like, they are so obvious. Like the
oh, yeah.
icons in the Mac menu options, like last year it was like there's a symbol for everything, and now they've reverted that even in the HIG. And then the edge-to-edge sidebars, like, it's not like a floating bubble anymore, but they actually go to the edge of the window. So that was a brief thing, and I feel really sorry for people that redesigned their apps completely around that experience that's gone now.
I do want to say on that sidebar one, that got a big hooray from me, because I'll just say it. I always thought that, you know, having that floating sidebar thing was like, this is stupid. This is such a waste of space. Why does this even exist? So I'm glad that they've gone backwards to the solid sidebar, because I think that is the visual model that your brain says, this is a set of tools. The other stuff is the content, which is ironic because Apple was always about bringing the content to be the most notable thing. And yet with glass, it's the least notable thing because you have to struggle to find the content, right?
Yeah. I think it's the Isaac Asimov, you know, three rules of robotics interpretation. Like, the whole reason the stories can even happen is because these seemingly correct and infallible laws. It's like, oh, well, how do I interpret these laws? I feel like, you know, taking sort of the devil's advocate, they were like, well, this brings the content even forward. And I think a lot of people online, including myself, are like, well, that's great for your completely fake demo. Let's bring up some real apps. Let's bring up some real content. People whose names aren't, you know, let's say Jim. People whose names are like 20 characters long. How does this look? People who have a bunch of busy stuff, not beautiful photography, where, you know, you're in this liminal space. It's like, no. There's like a whole bunch of stuff behind you. Now see what's going on.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I said this the other day when I was on another podcast. The glass to me has always felt like a technical demonstration of absolute brilliance that should never have left the lab. And that's kind of like, you know, it's that real Jurassic Park. Yeah, you look, you did it. It's fantastic. It's all live and everything else. But really, you know, what should you? You know, the only thing is, and I can't speak to this in person, but, you know, I know some folks on here can. To me, glass seems like, yes, I get how this can totally work with the Vision Pro, and it just will not work with anything else.
Yeah.
But maybe
ironically,
I'm wrong.
We don't have liquid glass on the Vision Pro either.
Yeah.
Oh, I am. Wow. I did not know that.
We have background glass, and we have sort of a neutral. We don't have dark
just the
and
background?
Light modes.
Oh, okay.
We don't have dark and light modes. We kind of have this gray frosted glass. But yeah, I don't think. Correct me if I'm wrong, Josh. We don't have any liquid glass effects on Vision OS.
The closest thing to liquid is the new Siri bubble, I suppose.
Right.
Oh.
I kind of sidetracking off of that thought. Last year's bubbly sidebar on the Mac, I felt was trying to bring some of that Vision OS, like, floaty round window thing into an environment where windows are naturally rectangles with hard corners and edges. You want to be able to drag and resize them and everything. Where I felt like that was a convention that would make more sense in a floating window where I don't have a defined visual rectangle to look at. So if it had a floating bubble of a sidebar on the side, sure, that'd be no problem. No complaints there. But it was a misapplication of that concept.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the Vision Pro, we now finally, one of the nice things about Vision Pro is, and I do this a lot, if you know the panoramas where you take your camera and you just pan really slowly and you take a big long landscape shot, those look amazing on Vision Pro, because when you load those up, you can actually surround yourself with the shot you've taken. So I took a picture at the Embarcadero in San Francisco a couple of years ago, and that I feel like I'm in that room and things like that. But one of the things we've wanted, you may have heard that you can work as if you're on the moon or at Mount Hope or Mount Hood or Jupiter last year they gave us, like the Jupiter behind Josh there, right? But this year, now we can get our own environments going because we can take our panoramas and make them into, and I don't know if they're using the Gaussian splat technology, because we've got a couple of things with Gaussian splats in Vision OS this year in Reality Kit and in Reality Composer Pro, but the fact that you can take your own panoramas and turn them into your working environment, right? So I have a panorama of my kitchen, which ironically is where I work most of the time, so I can make my environment look like my kitchen, which I think is really cool.
Mm. It's nice to go to the library and feel like you're at home.
So I can finally, and Josh and Tim, you'll get this one, I can finally take my four gray walls of my office at work and bring them home and have
bring
my
them
four
home. Exactly.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, maybe we should all go to like a you know one of those prison tours and do a panorama of one of the cells, and then
there you go. Yeah, that's it.
So my first panorama that I tried with this was an excellent shot that I have from last year when we went to the Grand Canyon.
Right.
That's not a relaxing environment to work in.
No.
It looks like you're sitting at the edge of the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Josh made the dive. He dived it right in, I think, right after it was available.
This was the first beta I did.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I run the beta on mine too, but I unfortunately have a jobby job right now on Vision Pro, so I have to keep my device in a compatibility mode, even though I am running beta on it, beta 26. Cool. Yeah. And then carrying on with the Gaussian splats, we have more. You're going to see Gaussian splats now on iOS and iPadOS and macOS too, because apparently the 3D maps on the Map app are now using Gaussian splats to make them look even more impressive. Which is, it's a really cool technology, you know. The concept is, if you don't know, it's like these, instead of building a model and then mapping a texture onto it that makes it look like a race car or whatever, now it's a whole series of little tiny dots that just slightly overlap and it makes it look like IRL, like real life, right? So,
yeah, I will say that, you know, when they were showing maps, I did think like, wow, that looks so good, I could end up being obsessed looking at the map and not looking out the window, because it really does look good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It was a big difference. Like, you know, it looks so much more realistic. Like they mentioned, you know, on stage, like the trees look a little bit more like the real trees do instead of the PlayStation 1 era, you know, box that kind of has a weird warp texture.
Yeah. It's not Minecraft anymore, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, all the technology like that that is impacting now maps and flyover. Flyover could have easily been this thing that was introduced, I believe it was iOS 6, with the new Maps app, and you know Apple could have just left it untouched and not done any improvements, and here we are in 2026 with Gaussian splats for maps and maps improvements, but it's making me think of going back to iOS 9 with the introduction of ARKit, and we thought, ooh, augmented reality on iPhone, and it's in millions of devices, and you can bring these AR devices with you, not even thinking we're going to get something like the Vision Pro a few years
100%.
Later.
Yeah.
And I wonder if these improvements to maps are also one of those things that we're going to look back on in a few years and think, oh, the reason I have these very realistic 3D maps when I'm walking around with my vision spectacles or whatever they are is because of the Gaussian splat work that was done for maps in 2026.
So I have a question for you, Josh, since you're running the beta 27. Mm-hmm. Is the Maps app native on Vision OS 27?
Of all the things I've looked at.
Because it's not on 26. There's a handful of apps, that Apple apps, that are not native on Vision OS yet.
This is still an iPad app.
Sad trombone. Do they? So when
first
you go
beta,
into the 3D mode, is you
it's
get
not
the
real
until
September.
Huh?
It's not final till September. This is first beta. And they might even, you know, technically they might release it as like a point release.
Yeah.
You know, 27.1. It's a real Vision Pro app now.
You know? Hey, and you know what? Give Apple a break. They've only just started using Swift in their apps. So come on.
Yeah. Not quite true, but yeah. Yeah, cool. All right. Next we have, well, then we can get into the child account. So I'm curious. I mean, I've always had a bugaboo because I've got lots of family members. Now I have grandchildren who are starting to use phones, and some of them have been using phones for quite a while. And one of the things I'm always concerned about with my nieces and nephews is the fact that my family members aren't as savvy about technology and about spam and scams as I am, right? So I'm glad to see now that Apple's come forward with, I guess, you know, we did have the Easy Finder thing. I forget what they called it back in the day, back in iOS 9 or System 9 days. But what was it called? Mac OS 9? Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah, so now we have this concept of a child account where Apple will, by default, start filtering out sites that they may not need to go to. They'll blur out or obscure images or content that the kid shouldn't be using when they go to the store. This is Jaime's follow-up on everything's follow-up on this show, we always say, right, Jaime?
In the long run, everything is follow-up.
Smurfberry purchases, right? And so now, yes. Now you'll have to ask for permission before you can buy something. And so apps you can browse and apps to ask to buy, those are both on by default. And there's also a concept of communication safety, which is the part about blurring and blocking content, and the idea of adding time allowances. So let me ask, I don't know, Peter, what your children's situation is like, but Josh, I know you have younglings. So what do you think about all this stuff?
I think there's a lot of interesting potential there. I like the idea of time allowances. There's been times where we want to be able to more finely control the time that our kids have for entertainment and for games. Thankfully, that neither of them have social media. I'd like to keep it that way for a while. But time allowances look interesting. They already have to do all of their app downloads and screen time requests through us anyway, so we're perfectly used to that. Being able to have them ask for specific time with websites and have access to that is interesting, as opposed to having to maintain an either massive deny list or an allow list. So these look like some nice improvements. I am also curious about the child account as well, because right now having both of them with an account is nice, but if there's any additional controls that I can get over there, especially for the next few years since they're not 13 yet, I'm definitely going to try this out. I'm probably got to go through Apple support with some customer issues with my son's Apple ID, but that's been an issue since the iOS 14 days, and Apple doesn't expose engineering talent that I can reach out to directly to address that. So
they did say,
if you are an engineer that works with, you know, Apple accounts and or screen time and can reach out to me, I've got an issue.
But I'm going to do air quotes because they did say that you can convert existing accounts to child accounts.
And I'm looking for that. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
So what's your situation, Peter? What do you think about this?
Yeah, so this is thankfully, well, not thankfully, depends how you look at it, I guess. I don't have any kids, so this is not something I have to thankfully be concerned about, because otherwise I think I'd be a nervous wreck all the time. but I'm always happy to see more work in these kind of areas, because, you know, sadly, the world we live in today, there are so many things we have to keep an eye on, and, you know, that's the things that we can see, and, you know, when we're around. So I think anything that goes to help protect people from content that they shouldn't necessarily see or areas they shouldn't get access to, plus limited screen time, because hey, that's a problem for all of us, right? You know, I think this is good, and you know, I hope this works out really well. I guess if it works really well, we'll know, because kids will be complaining, in which case, you know, mission accomplished, right? Yeah.
I did speak to somebody the other day that said that you know, at 9 p.m. they just turn the internet off. So even the parents can't use the internet, because they can't think of any other better way to manage the time, right?
That's a really good idea, though, isn't it?
Except yeah, we've not, if, about that. Not if you're a cable cutter.
Well, yeah, well, that's true.
Yeah. We've thought about that, at least with our Eero router. We've got all of the kids' devices on their profile, so we could just disable their whole profile after a certain time.
Sure.
Yeah, I will say it's fun with limiting games and limiting access to certain things, and then seeing your kids do other things that you wouldn't imagine, like my son staying up late playing chess on Duolingo.
Yeah.
It's like I'm getting ready for bed and I get this notification of, can you beat my score? I'm like, dude, go to bed.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I have been trying to do this thing this year that's been working out really well, which is, you know, the last hour of my day is walk away from all the machines and sit down with an actual paper book. And it has been working out great. So,
do you use the notification on your watch to tell you it's time to get ready for bed and all that stuff? I do. I ignore it every night. But
Yeah, I used to. Because also I knew that it's like I'll get distracted and forget, you know.
Yeah. I always pick up some code and start coding at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And then I'm up till 3:30 fighting with some AI or a server or something. You know.
Yeah, that's why I force myself. It's like whatever the situation is, walk away, pick up a book. And it certainly helps. I think it helps me sleep better, to be honest.
It does, yeah. So according to science, if you believe science, right? Apparently it does. So
there you go.
You have any thoughts on this stuff, Jaime? What do you think, Mr. Banker?
Yeah, I think it's generally a good thing. I don't have kids, but I do have family members, and I'm basically like IT support for them. So if they encounter an issue with kids that are getting to like that age where they're going to start doing dodgier things on the interwebs, it's good for me to be aware of it. I'm aware that people who are looking at various rights for kids, because not every parent is a good parent. Sometimes there are like abusive situations. I don't know how Apple's going to thread the needle on that one, but I would say there are alternatives to dealing with that situation, you know, as a society, and it shouldn't be in a private corporation. I think in general, these are good to, I was joking in some of our chat of like, you know, nudes equals no, like noodles kind of thing, like nudes equals no in your P list is essentially the story here. And I think this is generally good, right? I don't think we want, you know, kindergartners checking out OnlyFans, for an example, right? Like, I think we can generally agree, like, hey, it'd be better if they couldn't. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be able to purchase, you know, $5,000 worth of Smurf berries and a bunch of other things.
Yeah.
And so a lot of folks who listen to this very show, like, you're hyper-technical just by, like, the fact that you're listening to this show, unless Tim gives it, like, a funny name that brings in fans of something completely. We had that happen with a Game of Thrones-ish title one time before, you know, Lost Redditor type stuff. So ignoring that, you know, just think about most people who are like, oh, there's a new iPhone coming out. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, of course there's a new iPhone, and we'd get all up, you know, uppity about it. But like most people, like they just live their lives and then they say, oh, look, AT&T is giving a deal. I guess I'll get a new phone. Like that's most people.
Right,
so
yeah.
I think this will start helping most people deal with a most people problem for their younglings.
Yeah. So after the show, can you help me fix my printer, Jaime?
Yeah, so this is the call out. You know, I can literally, I say this sometimes figuratively, like I'm literally looking at the camera. If you're an Apple engineer and you're dealing with anything even remotely related to accounts, Mr. Tim Mitra has everything. He has like a Rolodex. Like he has signed up for every account that you have come up with over the decades. Mm. And his case, you all aren't cutting it. Like he suffers here. Yeah. I'm asking on his behalf, help him solve his .Mac, you know, Apple ID this, Apple ID that. Because like, you know, you handled the real solid one person, one account, great. You know, one person, one family, great. That plus like a million more is what Tim has.
And if anyone knows a good shop where I can get a new quill and parchments, please let me know. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's time for the, I'll post the medieval tech support in the show notes later. I don't know if you've seen that one, Peter.
No, I haven't.
The guy brings, he's got this book and he calls his friend over who's the expert. He says, you gave me this book yesterday and I can't figure out how to get it to work. Because he's got it lying on the covers down and he's looking at the back of it and he's expecting to turn it to the left and he can't because the book's turned around.
It's like, what's going on? Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it's a great. It's in I think it's in Swedish or something. It's pretty funny. Yeah, so this brings us to speaking of intelligence. See my segue there?
Oh, great, fantastic.
Apple intelligence. It wasn't intentional, but I'll take credit for it. So apparently we have a new architecture and we have a new Siri or Siri 3.0. I don't know which what's Siri.
Siri AI.
Siri right? AI. Yes, they even gave it a
Siri
new name,
AI.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, Siri, go away. Siri. Siri, go away. We can't
Are you
use
running
the S
betas,
word on
Tim?
The show,
huh? Are you running
no,
the betas?
No, that was just the regular one. I never noticed that the Siri on the pause to for effect. I never noticed that Siri has a bubble in Vision OS 26. I guess that must be one of the things they added in the later versions, right?
In 26, there's the bubble. In 27, you can actually move it around.
Yeah, you can put it on your desk or make a widget out of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
know this because Josh had two of them open yesterday and couldn't figure out how to close either one of them.
I prompted neither of them, and I couldn't get them to go away.
Do you have like a trouble with tribbles situation?
Something
Siri
like
bubbles
that, yeah.
are falling out of the windows.
I did learn
that would
that
be a good game, Jaime. That you just had a great idea for a game.
There you go.
I did series. Learn when you tapped, when you hold your hand, look at it, and you get the little home indicator. Instead of tapping it, will bring the home screen up. If you tap and hold, that prompts for the assistant. And apparently I had some lag happen as I was doing that, which is what caused it to appear the first time. And then I recreated the gesture, had it go a second time, expecting it to replace the first one, which had no way of closing it. And then I had two that I was able to drag around. And yeah,
it is a 1.0 beta, we will point out. Yeah, so we have new Apple Foundation models that are and tied in with Google Gemini, which everybody saw coming, right? We all knew about this coming.
But what is the Gemini integration? It's not built on top of the Google Assistant. Some people are thinking, right. Oh, this Siri is powered by the Google Assistant. That's not what that is.
Is Clippy going to come back?
Yeah, so it's just Apple's using the Gemini models, but it's still Apple in control. It's not Google Assistant underneath.
And as they emphasize, it is still mostly on device.
Right, I was going to say exactly that. Or using private cloud compute, which I guess is like going to Apple servers for some heavy lifting. Is that the idea behind that?
Obscuring and making guarantees around, like, if we cut the power, like the Ghostbusters or like the internet at your all's house, like you were talking about, you cut the thing, it's like it wipes, you know, all, you know, guarantees that like the janitors aren't able to go in there and like pull disks out and stuff. Like, you know, they didn't talk about it here, but I know they've talked about private cloud compute of like just how serious it is, the containers and stuff that they had security researchers like, hey, come take a look, see if you can break it. If you can break
and they
it
still have
we're
that.
Gonna fix it.
Yeah, they said you could do that. Yeah. But the one thing I was this is what I mentioned this earlier, like, so the idea, and I didn't quite catch this fully, but like if you want to use the third party like a Claude or Codex or the other ones, right, you can do that. Like Apple will kind of do part of that somehow. Like was that maybe in the platform State of the Union where you talked about that?
I think that was in relation to Xcode, where you've been able to bring in, you know, Anthropic's Claude as a model to help you as an agent, OpenAI's ChatGPT, Codex for the agent, and then now Google's Gemini is the new one. And so you can bring in your own stuff there. These are they're out of
but are we still paying for that separate account, or did I misunderstand that?
No, according to the marketing details, as they say, there is no token cost, but I can't believe there's like truly no token cost, because even if Apple in their generosity says, look, we're going to foot the bill for X amount of, you know, tokens for everybody, there has to be a limit somewhere, right? There just has to be. Because otherwise, there would be limited reasons for these third parties to want to integrate with Apple, right? I mean, they'd be losing money, even if Apple's paying them something. But you can bet that Apple's like, hey, we're Apple. We will pay you X amount per token, and you'll take it.
Yeah, but don't forget, it's like 165 billion million developers, right? So that's a good chunk of coin to say, sure, 5 cents a token or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Economies of scale.
If I had the negotiating, what I would do is be like, look, Google, we've worked together before in a bunch of stuff. Remember how we're paying you all this money to make Google Search the primary in Safari? What about that kind of concept? So let's say it's, you know, $100 billion worth. I'm going to give you 50, but hear me out. It's a guaranteed 50, not a you got to go get it 50. Mm-hmm. And remember that you are in a, you know, existential battle with Anthropic and OpenAI, and this will get your stuff and the way that your stuff works in front of more people. Developers for sure, but then also, you know, the Siri AI piece. Mm-hmm. And now how much do you want to sign on the dotted line for this, right? It's kind of like, it sure would be a shame if something were to happen to those nice LLMs of yours kind of thing.
And also, you know, don't be surprised when suddenly our Apple developer accounts go from 99 to 299, right? Yeah, you know.
Yeah, when you know, they're like bumping up the price of iCloud, iCloud Plus type stuff, Apple Care. Like they just need to make like a dollar more on Apple TV Plus or something, right? To just sort of like cover it up, mm-hmm. sort of thing.
I was kind of expecting, and maybe it could still happen in the future, but building off of Apple's private cloud compute, Apple having a coding assistant of their own that is highly optimized for Swift, for developing for their platforms, that they could train early with their upcoming releases, since it's only, you know, their servers and everything. And I could see that being part of maybe either a paid, I would say either part of the payment for a developer account, or it could be something where you pay it like you do with Xcode Cloud, which would almost be in a way token-based there as well. But I still am kind of holding out Apple doing something like that.
Maybe next year, you know, this was like the reset, right? We were talking mm-hmm. about like, hey, they promised Siri awesome AI. Whoops, didn't happen. Mm-hmm. You know, that's another mm-hmm. mark, like the AirPower device that never came out. It's a big mark on them. So this was the Snow Tahoe release to reset things, get them in a good foundation. Your idea makes a lot of sense. I think what they did this year was kind of like the poor man's version with like, mm-hmm. oh, look, we have all these skills here that help you with Swift UI and other things. I could see them adding upon that in the future. Mm-hmm. Sure, especially given they were like, oh, look, Xcode Cloud works way easier. It's just a few clicks. We've gotten rid of the friction. Oh, look, Xcode itself, not to peek too far in the future. Mm-hmm. You don't have to come up with a bundle ID. You don't have to create a file. Like, just say new and just start coding and then figure out all that detail stuff later. Yeah. So what you're talking about, Josh, would make a lot of sense for, like, next year's release.
The thing is, though, all of this is heavily dependent on them actually getting it to work this time, right? And
oh,
I hate to bring that up.
Chestnut. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because I was talking with a friend of mine the other day, and he said to me, well, what if it doesn't? And I said, that's not an option. If it doesn't work this time, Apple doesn't have any other options. And so it has to work at all costs. Otherwise, it's game over for Apple and AI mm-hmm. being taken seriously, right? Yeah. So we'll see. But I mean, this year I feel like, okay, whatever you do with AI, Apple, because you sure spent enough at the keynote and that talking about it, you better darn well make something work. Otherwise, you just made a terrible situation unforgivable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did talk about some of the other interesting things about like the image understanding and creation. I'm not really looking forward to image creation myself, but on-screen awareness, and even on Vision OS, to be able to have the Siri understand what you're looking at and be able to explain that mm-hmm. to you, that'll be helpful for people driving wheelchairs and things like that. But what I get kind of scared about it is when they talk about Siri being your assistant or being embedded in your Mac search now, your Mac Find, right? And the reason why I say that is because You know, I had a guest on a couple of weeks ago talking about OpenClaw and how he gives it access to all of his stuff, and then this AI, presumably on his own home server, helps him make decisions. I don't want anybody sending email on my behalf or reading through my private notes. And, you know, like I to this day, I mean, I've been using an iPhone for, 15, 16 years. I still don't let it have my contacts. Even though every app on the planet asks me, we could make it so much easier if we could have your contacts. No effing way. Mm-hmm. But I mean, so what do you guys think about this, always on, on Windows and Microsoft and Google platforms, you kept getting nagged by this, hey, let's turn on all the Google bells and whistles and, you know, make your life so much easier. And then all of your content will get rejected from socials because it's all written by AI. But what do you think about AIs taking, or letting the AIs take over, perhaps too soon?
It's such a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because when you use one of these tools, whichever one it may be, and it works and goes above and beyond and does something you didn't think of, that suddenly is like, oh my gosh, that is awesome, right? And you're super thankful for it. And then on the flip side, yes, you're thinking, wait a minute, I guess I gave you access to that, right? And now I'm feeling a bit insecure. I'm okay with it when it's on device, but then the problem becomes and I'm not saying that that's not true. The problem becomes that I'm trusting that what I'm told doesn't have a flaw in it somewhere.
Right, yeah.
And that becomes the problem, right? I would so dearly love to have conversations with that lady about all sorts of things that would really help me out, like when I'm driving to and from the office and things right. like that.
Yep.
But then I do stop and think, oh, I don't know. Is something like taking this note for me and looking up my next appointment or something like that, is it really so super important that I hand over control to all those things and again assume that it went correctly? And that's kind of where, like I say, that's for me is where it's like, okay, Apple, you've really got to earn my trust on this one. Not because I think you're doing anything nefarious, but because your history says, you know, you've kind of made some mistakes before. And this is not something it's bad enough when servers get hacked and networks get hacked.
Yeah,
and now I'm freely populating those things with this stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the one concern for me is the separation of work and home. Mm-hmm. Because I work for myself and I have for the last 20 years, my work machine is also where I have trusted client information.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I can't in all consciousness let the dogs loose on my data drive, right?
Yeah.
Because it's going to find notes customers who've said, here, hang on to my password because I can't be bothered to write it down or remember it.
Right.
And they come and hit me up. Thankfully, more and more services are moving towards the point where I can't keep their passwords anymore, which is great.
Yeah.
But I mean, like my 1Password account, I would probably say 25% of it is customer data, right? So that's where I get leery about this, clean thing. And I was just thinking, actually, Jaime, the fact that my mobile me ID, Apple ID, is the one I use for all my personal sharing and things like that, and my IT guy ID, Apple ID, is the one I use for business. So there is a kind of a separation on my Mac. Even though I have to live with multiple Apple IDs, and I have more than two, by the way, Jaime. But
that's why I say you have like a Rolodex of the IDs.
One, I have, because every time I get a new piece of hardware that's not available in Canada, I have to
Mac,
use the American
dot
one.
Not mobile me, whatever they came out with over the decades.
It's funny. I was just thinking the other day. I still have my AOL account, which I didn't. I just went and logged in the other day just to see if it's still there. That's my eWorld account. That's how far back that one goes. Anyway.
Yeah. I think, Tim, you raised some good questions, right? So I'm going to talk about some of the stuff that's going on in industry that I think will help some of the things you're talking about, and then use a real-world analogy. So maybe I'll use the real-world analogy first. So I have become increasingly aware of what executives do and how they run their lives. And I realize much more the depth of access that their assistants like real world assistants, like the kind that can bring you coffee. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what? They can see your email? Like, so when I'm emailing you, like, they can read it, and it's just pinky promise that they won't do that. And
do you think Paul McCartney really writes his own social network feed?
It's that sort of thing, right, that's already happening, and I'm like, oh, now I understand why execs really love real-world phone calls, because this is the one thing that the assistant, the real-world human flesh-and-blood assistant can't peek into, and it also doesn't leave a paper trail, right? Like, it's a completely different thing. I'm like, oh, okay, I hear you. So real-world analogy exists for, like, something that is going really deep into your normal personal life, right? For the digital world, it's kind of fascinating, you know, Peter Steinberger's Open Claw, you know, it has like a lobster mascot. Like, it's wild. It strikes me as the sort of Napster equivalent. So indulge me here on this quick analogy. So when I was in college, you know, people would share with their buddies music, you know, on FTP servers between this university and that university. And, like, the music industry largely didn't care because the barrier to entry was really high. It wasn't that interesting. But as soon as Napster came out and anybody could just type in Metallica, they lost their minds, until Mr. Jobs said, hey, industry, here's a better way. You know, iTunes, 99 cents, and 1,000 phones in your pocket with the iPod. And did that eliminate all of the people? I'm like, no, like, there's still definitely college students today that are, you know, sharing stuff with each other for free. But by and large, most people are like, oh, this is available on Apple TV, this is available on mm-hmm. Apple Music. I just click, and I'm done with it. I think some of the stuff that's going on here with OpenClaw, there's things like NVIDIA has NemoClaw, which is supposed to put more guarantees and stronger security and protections around it. Microsoft at Build just came out with its MXC, which I thought was Most Extreme Elimination Challenge, if anybody remembers that TV show on Spike TV. But no, it's Microsoft Execution Container. And they brought Peter Steinberger out here. He's like, look, OpenClaw can do these things. You know, it can go awry. It can do terrible things to your drive. Let's watch it go do something. And then it stops. It gets stopped by the MXC container, where it would have, like, you know, navigated outside of this directory or nuked this directory, and Microsoft had technology to prevent that from happening. I just assume Apple will do very similar kind of things. So Tim, to your point of, like, wrapping it up here is, you know, you could hopefully have like an Apple execution container that's like, hey, this little spot right here on my hard drive, you don't get to touch this. Everything else, fair game. You get to be in my downloads folder, for example. You get to be in a, you know, this is just for you Siri folder. You don't get to touch this because this, as you just mentioned, has customer info.
Yeah. I will say, though, let me just quickly add one thing there, which is the problem is always going to be, mm-hmm. and even more so these days, the user. Because, Jaime, you were saying there, I'm just thinking about when I use Claude, right? And it says, right. Hey, right. You want to execute this tool? You want to execute this tool? You want to execute this tool? There's that security blindness where users just hit the return key. Just do it. Just do it.
Whatever
just
button,
do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, whilst it's great to have these tools, unfortunately, most users are still just going to say, yeah, do it.
Yeah. So
it's true. And I'll go for it, Josh.
Yeah.
Go for
it. I like the reference to OpenClaw, because that was the first thing I was thinking. When we think about a personal assistant, I think that's been the one that's been most compelling to me mentally, this idea that this assistant, you can not only give it access to things and work on your behalf, but it can teach itself skills, it can get smarter, it can get better. But what's powering it? A lot of that is still AI driven by other companies on their clouds, and right. My data is no longer my data. When I think about this new Siri, even though it's now backed by Apple Foundation models that are trained based off of Google Gemini models, it's got an LLM powering it, it feels like it's still building off of what Apple has had for years on your device, which is an indexed cache of data, right, which is where Spotlight was getting all of its information. So you've got this local on-device index with an AI that now accesses it. But what powers it? It's powered by App Intents. which has been powering intelligence on the system and shortcuts for years. That's still primarily where that's coming from. So there's really not a lot new when it comes to functionality. The new part is you can now have a conversation and keep things going and have contact go from one to the other. It's not like suddenly your assistant on your phone now has the ability to wipe its own drive. It's like it's not going to do that, thankfully. And I think that's been where Apple takes the cautious approach. And we see that differently with Microsoft throwing Copilot, and before that they had Cortana, and trying to have some of that working together. But Google's all in on the cloud. Like, everything for them is Gemini and Nano Banana and whatever. What are all those models they got? They got, like, I think 37,000, whatever it is. They just keep spawning them every day. But that's what people are comfortable with if you're working with Google and with that stuff. But Apple is very much curated their own ecosystem of users who are people like Tim, who don't want any app getting access to the contacts. People like ones in my family who don't want their contacts, don't want to share anything with any other app because of that. But what about your phone already knowing your index of your photos? Like, it knows that anyway. Like, you can search in Spotlight now. This on-device AI is just giving you another way to access it. And I think that's still the appeal of it, where I think new Siri is going to be better perceived in the minds of the public compared to other AI. And I think that's still Apple's advantage. They didn't pursue AI for the sake of AI. They didn't, you know, go out and do that. Now, I do like what they announced this year, even though they've been building iPhones made for Apple Intelligence for years. Love that old marketing for the iPhone 16. but at least what they've announced is going to work on all the devices that have Apple Intelligence. But this year, they also announced specific models that require the iPhone 17, Macs with M3s, and iPads with M4s, and 12 gigs of RAM.
Right. Yeah, for some of the higher functions, yeah.
But that's still on device. And I would like to think that that is just a precursor of how Apple's going to look at this moving forward, is as new generations of devices come out, where we could have better and better on-device models on a phone, on an iPad, or on a Mac, getting to where some of those things, even going back to what I talked about earlier with the coding assistant, could we see, oh, you just bought an M7 Mac with a M7 Max chip, and you got 128 gigs of RAM. Sure, you can do your own local coding assistant, no problem. That's an option now that you can get. I would like to think that that is something in our future.
So I do want to point out here, as I was listening to you all, it suddenly struck me that, you know, and in fact, Apple even highlighted it a few times this year, enough that I noticed it when they kept saying about Spotlight's semantic search. And then I realized, like, you know what? Yeah, my Apple devices have been cataloging everything on my machine for years. But just because we've put the name AI in front of it now, we're all freaking out about it. And we should, maybe.
Well, we put it at the end. We didn't put it at the front.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But we've been doing it with the Spotlight search. You know, and so in many ways, we've sort of accepted it, just with a different branding.
Like Apple did add the option where they gave third party apps access to your photos, but now they've backed out on that by saying that we as users can limit the number of photos that our apps can do. And I do that on my social apps and Facebook and things like that. Choose which photos Facebook can let me post.
100%. It's
an extra step, right? But I mean, that's the thing. Is like, is this a lesson learned that they exposed too much on somebody's devices and they got caught with their pants down? But anyway, I do want to talk about the new camera stuff, because I always like it when they try and drive, you know, the cattle towards the Vision Pro, right? Because I've been taking spatial photos since I got my Vision Pro. In fact, I went out and upgraded to the point where I could take spatial photos on the phone. And I take any photo, I mean, every photo I take is, you know, like one quarter of them at least are spatial. And Josh and I share our spatial photos with the gang we have on our spatial FaceTime every 2 weeks. But one thing that was cool, I think, is going to drive other people who aren't wearing Vision Pros to use spatial is the idea that you can now reframe a shot. And again, I think they're probably using Gaussian splats there to do that, because when you take a spatial shot and you don't like the positioning, you can move the person and the background will get re-rendered or whatever. Apple does a really good job, and you know, and Josh and I both experienced this, where you can take a 2D picture you took 30 years ago and turn it into a 3D
or more
photo. Yeah, I've gone back to the before time. Yeah, and it's amazing, and you know, you kind of get the wallpaper might not be perfect, but they do a pretty good job of making those old photos into 3D. But so I think it's cool that now we have this ability to reframe our shots. And of course, I'm a Photoshop expert from 1.0, right? The ability to clean up photos has always been in my toolkit. But what do you guys think about it? You know, coming at the ways you can clean up your photos now, remove people from shots and things.
I'll go last because I'll probably get some hate for my viewpoints being
get your pitchforks ready, folks.
Yeah, yes. Okay. Being an ex-pro photographer.
Ooh, of course, yes.
So I'll step back for a minute.
I'll sacrifice myself. I have never felt like I needed those tools that often. Mm-hmm. And so I don't ever want to remove like people from a photo. I don't see necessarily the need for that. Yeah. Yeah.
Like a lamppost or something from somebody's back of their head or whatever. Which Peter and I know never frame a shot with a tree coming out of somebody's head.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
I do think reframing is interesting. I do think the, what's the term where they, if you zoom out, it'll fill in.
Oh, it expands the background, right?
Expands, yes. Creatively. I did play with that yesterday. Mm. But I think the demo that they used in the keynote was excessive. And when that person was reframing with their children, I'm like, actually, I think that's a worse shot than when you started. That's just me personally.
Yeah.
I would not have touched that. I think it's just one of those cases of Apple giving tools, not necessarily saying that it's good to use those tools or that we should use those tools. And I'm slightly disappointed that this was announced, but the rumors of an advanced camera app did not pan out. It would have been great if that happened, because then they would be saying, okay, you can clean up these photos if you want, but we've also got this camera so that you can still take cool regular photos that hopefully don't need to be touched up like that.
Yeah, didn't they buy Halide last year, the advanced camera app?
No,
not Halide. They bought something, though, didn't they?
They poached the designer.
Oh, from
Sebastian DeWitt. They acquired the designer.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Mm, so he's at Apple now.
So I have a friend who does really interesting things with video, because we're working on this spatial. I'm surprised you're not part of it, Josh, but we're doing this spatial visions thing, which is a project where we talk about how Vision Pro has changed our life. Is working on a documentary for that, but one of the gentlemen there has rewritten the spatial video app that you shoot yourself with. Shoot as in terms of taking pictures, but or videos. But yeah, and he's cranked it up. He's taken the limits off of the standard photo app, or I think there's limits on how many K it can use and whatever, like how many the frame rate and that kind of stuff. And he's cranked this thing up. It's called Spatial Apps. I'll put a link in the show notes. But it's a pretty cool app, and he and I work on a lot of he's the gentleman who also worked on the app. I think it's called MVTube, which lets you take your spatial videos and convert them into the format that the YouTube app supports on Vision Pro. So if you look on my channel, I've got a spatial playlist, which is some of the shots that I've converted to be able to look on YouTube. Right? And they surprisingly look better on YouTube than they do on the native photo app. But yeah, so I mean, there's lots of room for improvement on the camera thing, but I didn't realize it was a rumored thing. But before we move, speaking of rumors, before we move to the to the platform State of the Union specifically. The rumors I heard last week before DubDub was supposed to come out was all this hardware that was none of which was announced. You know, there's supposed to be a new home iPod minis and earbuds with cameras in them and a home hub thing, you know, that sits in your kitchen. I'm not sure why you'd need that, but because I don't know why people need the Android version of that. Yeah, what did you think about the lack of or the fact that I think the rumor mill was wrong or maybe misled, maybe intentionally misled?
I'm not surprised at all, actually, because I think
we never did get your opinion on Photo. We'll come back to that.
Yeah, it's not going to be good, folks. you know, I always think traditionally, like, the fall is hardware time for the most part. Consumer hardware, I guess I should say. And so I wasn't that surprised, but I also think they clearly wanted to spend an awful lot of time convincing themselves that they've solved the AI problem. And I think that that's, you know, maybe there was some hardware and at the last minute they said, you know what, we don't want people talking about new hardware when we really want people talking about the fact that we solved the AI problem. And that's sort of my take on it. And also, I think as well, because the hardware that will come later in the year is going to be heavily dependent on this AI stuff. Like, for example, maybe the famed Apple Home device is the new Apple TV that is beefy and powerful enough that it's also the central AI device in the house, right? So I think that that's what they want to do. They want to separate them so that at the end of the year they can say, hey, you know how well this AI is working? Look, we got this thing now. And that's kind of my thoughts on it.
I mean, any thoughts on that?
It's interesting to me because in some respects, you kind of already know what DubDub's going to be about because we've been getting rumors like since the last DubDub leading up to today kind of thing. So it's interesting how there's these inside things. And so it's hard to tell, is this stuff that was, you know, baking in the oven and they said, oh, you know what, it's burnt, we're not going to ship it? Or is some of this Apple getting better at sort of sussing out the leaks and being able to give information and see who is the source of the leak? It's like, ah, I gave you this version, you know, where the buttons were blue. It's like, clearly it was you who leaked it because I gave your colleague the ones where the buttons are teal and I can tell the difference, you know, just something like that. It's hard for me to tell there, but I know that you know, Daring Fireball Gruber, like, he keeps roasting Mark Gurman like constantly about the stuff that he's got wrong. So I'm not sure what to think there, but it is amusing. You know, it keeps us entertained in between Apple events, that's for sure.
All right, Peter, tell us what your thoughts on Photo. On the camera, the camera app, sorry.
So there's two, I have two lines of thought on this. Number one, all this stuff that they announced is great if you are a snap and run kind of photo person, or, you know, like the example I used when I was talking with a friend of mine the other day is you've got kids and if you don't push that button now, you're never going to get that moment again. All of this stuff makes sense, right? But I think from an artist's point of view, all of this stuff is making it worse, because when it comes to, in air quotes, you know, artistic photographs, think fine art, think that kind of thing, the whole point with all of that stuff is you think about it, you take your time. As so many of us know, is in the video world and everything else, right, that phrase, get it right in the camera. Right. That is still number one. Right. I'm not going to put a $2,000 on the front of my camera and take one snap frame and run away. That's not how that's going to work. So if you are capturing a moment, this is great. Oh, I didn't see that goat that was attacking a kid in the background. Now I can take him out. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if I'm creating a moment, that requires me to stop and think about it, right? So if I'm taking a portrait of my kids or some family member, whatever it may be, a beautiful sunset, I should be taking more than a couple of seconds to think about that and framing it and everything else. I shouldn't be, you know, essentially the equivalent of like, well, why don't I just hold a 360 camera in the air and frame it later on when I look at it, right? And so that's kind of my take on it. And that's, I'm sure that's going to be unpopular for some folks. But the whole point is, it's the same reason that I write with pen and paper still first for everything. Because I want to think about it. Mm-hmm. And giving me tools to do it quickly, solve my problem quickly, not understand how I solved my problem, not learn from the problem, it has its place. But it's really making it easier for me to do stupid things, I guess is the way to put it. And so there's my controversial take on it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just went and saw the Paul McCartney exhibit. Apparently, when he came to the United States and they toured in Paris a bit, when they were just coming up in like the 62, he was a photographer. And he took pictures of the people taking pictures of him and the crowds. And the and of course, there's lots of shots of, you know, Ringo and George and John and some of Paul as well and Brian Epstein and stuff like that. Various people around them. But for me as an artist, the fascinating shots were the photos he took candidly of stuff around him, like billboards on the side of the road or storefronts or seagulls flying around. You know, not there wasn't a beetle in the shot is what I'm saying, right?
It tells a story, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. It's a moment in time. I mean, a moment in time that you and I will never experience. I mean, I was 2 years old at the time, right? So I don't remember anything beyond three, right?
And I also, I will say,
I mean,
you know, and I've said this, said this for a while, the camera, you know, so like the cameras on the iPhone, phenomenal quality. And the software that corrects things is phenomenal, but the taking the picture and having it make it a perfect image removes the personality of that frame, right? And it removes some of that feeling, some of that story, because maybe that picture of your kids in the sunset was great because of the way they had the color tint from the sunset, but yet the software decided, well, that's clearly a blue dress and I've got to fix the color tint, right? You know, so removing that decision process is kind of where I take issue with these things.
That's a really interesting point that you said that, because I've seen some photos of some of my friends who are from different nationalities where the camera or the camera has like Americanized them, if you know what I mean. It's made them made them seem whiter than they are in real life, right? Which, and I've always looked at those photos and thought to myself, because it's politically incorrect to say, do you not see what the camera did there? You don't look like that, right?
Yeah, right, you know? right.
But But the other thing, I like live photos myself, because sometimes, you know, somebody's got their eyes closed or they've got the wrong expression. I like to go in and pick a different shot. You know, we would do bracketed shots back in the day. You would go snap real quick and then get the right one, take the one shot out of it, right? So
And that is like what I used to do with weddings and stuff was, you know, it rarely was it the frame you thought it was going to be. It's the one or two either side. So having a camera, a dedicated like actual camera that can do a burst of even just 5 frames a second gives me enough that I feel confident I've got the one in there somewhere, you know.
My last comment on the images is just earlier mentioned you had said, Tim, you're from the Photoshop One days. For some people, these editing tools in photos is their Photoshop.
Yeah, yes, true. That's what I meant. Like, for me, it's not needed, but I know for people, many people it is. And obviously, Apple put it in there for a reason, because somebody must be using it, right? Because they wouldn't give us software we wouldn't use, right? Right. But coming to the Platform State of the Union, so one of the things I'm curious about is, I'm a big fan of agentic coding, and I've been using it in Xcode. You know, I put a skill in there, I have it write a memory file or whatever, so it doesn't forget what we're talking about. But and I've been using Claude on Claude in my own work. But lately, I've been working on a contract where we don't have access to Claude in Xcode. We can only use it in the cursor editor. which I thought was a different thing. But anyway, yeah, so it's very frustrating not to be able to use it directly in Xcode. So I'm curious, out of you guys, who's using Claude or whatever the agent is you're using right in Xcode and letting it run rampant with your code?
Yep, I've been doing it in Xcode 26. It was not great at first, but that was my fault. And the reason I say that was once I had taken the time to tweak and turn on some of the Claude plugins and set up a set of agents dedicated at Swift, Swift UI testing, all that kind of stuff. Once I had configured and set that stuff up, my experience in Xcode in particular has been so much better. And I totally get why people say this sucks and so on and so on. And I would agree until it's like, yes, well, did you actually set it up for your specific
some
scenario?
Assembly required, yeah, that's what it should
exactly
say.
And so now you know, I don't use it for jobby job work, but I use it for my personal apps and so on, and I am confident to do so very much in the way that I believe AI works best, which is as an assistant, you know. So, for example, the other day I was like, oh, I got some problem with this Swift data and cloud kit, and I can't figure it out. Take a look and see if you can figure it out. And it pointed me enough that the light went on and I knew what the problem was. And between me and the agentic AI, we solved it. And that's how I do it. And in Xcode, I'm very excited about, in particular, this year's Xcode and the way it's going to work with those adjustments. So that's how I do it.
Yeah. How about you, Josh? Yeah.
I use it fairly regularly. I'm hesitant to have it just go wild on a code base, but I do prompt it for specific tasks, specific files that I'm working on. At the day job, I've been using it to help me with migrating to Swift 6 language mode and adopting some of the newer Swift concurrency stuff for my own projects. I've also been using it to get some feedback on some features and get assistance with app shortcuts, though I will admit, after working with it for a few days, all of its suggestions have failed, and I am still at a loss as to why app shortcuts are not working for me, so I feel like I might need an actual human, because AI might be failing there. But in general, I found it very productive, very useful in Xcode to really quickly get over some initial roadblocks with starting a new feature. I've also used it communicating in Xcode, but I will use it to also then update my changelog and release notes files that I have in my repos so that it'll be up to date with the features that I'm adding. And I'm really looking forward to Xcode 27 with the improvements to having your AI localize your app from within Xcode. Right now, I've been doing that through Claude Cowork, but making that seamless in Xcode is probably going to improve my workflow there as well. So I'm looking forward to that.
You know, it's funny, Josh, because the other day, it's funny how it shows how it can work for one person and not for the other, because I actually did use it to create some app intents, and to my complete astonishment, it worked.
My intents work. It's my Siri shortcuts. When I try to trigger it verbally, those fail.
Okay, so I did. So that was part of it. I didn't ship that part of it, but it did work for that as well. So it's funny how it's so true that, hey, you know, your experience may vary.
And the problem is I've manually reviewed all the code it's done, and it matches up everything that Apple says should work, and it doesn't. So.
Oh, well, then you blame Xcode. Isn't that the way this goes, guys?
So speaking of not working in Xcode, what are you doing these days, Jaime, with agentic coding?
I'm not in Xcode, so I don't really have a lot to add there. But using stuff at work, which ends up being more around documentation, around web applications, API stuff. I'm gonna have to find reasons to take the Claude settings and move that over and like actually use Xcode. Like in my day job, that's funny enough, not what I've been doing. But a lot of this stuff is kind of smooshing together, and with Apple increasingly investing, they can help overcome some of what I've seen where like hey, you know, the regular models are trained on a bunch of very out of date Stack Overflow materials right. when Swift was still doing this, and now it's slowly starting to get you know, stable. Actually, it's been stable for quite some time, but there hasn't been as much new material out there to slurp up and put into the model. So if Apple can just be like, well, this is the right way, like here, this is what you should be doing, we're running it on Apple you know, built code, like I think that will help a lot. And that'll make it a whole lot more interesting than like, wow, I can make this whole great web application. All right, can you move this this view 3 pixels to the left? No, I can't. I don't know what a view is. It's like, ah, oh, what do you mean it's looking for UI view? Come on, dude.
Yeah, no, that's where the agents come in. So coming back to App Intents, Josh, I mean, they did talk quite a bit about, and no, looking at you as the App Intents expert here on the show right now. They talked about Toolbox and Orchestrator as two parts as well. I think that I'm not sure if they're related to the App Intents, but the fact that App Intents now connects directly with Apple Intelligence.
What are your thoughts? There's a. I've not gone into a lot of those sessions yet. I've been focusing more on Swift and developer tools for my team this week, but it feels like again App Intents are the building blocks of everything Siri, and it has been for years, but especially with what powers this new experience. And I had a funny interaction actually Monday night with the new Siri on my iPhone. I was trying to test out the shortcuts that aren't working, and I tried to trigger it with the phrase that I've got set up. Didn't work. And right in my Siri conversation, I asked it, why isn't it working? And it actually started returning information like I would expect if I was chatting with Claude. I'm not going to say it's that same level of quality, but it was like, have you checked this? Have you checked this? And unfortunately, I had to say, yes, I did all those things. It's still not working. And it had nothing to say. But yeah.
So did you guys catch what the... I just wrote down Toolbox and Orchestrator. I don't remember what specifically they are about.
I don't recall those.
I may not have those exact notes, but the idea was, you know, we've been lovingly handcrafting code, right? And there's a lot of discussion going on about, hey, prompting agents, bro, that's totally last year. Cool people nowadays write loops to figure out what's going on your behalf. And I'm like, well, that's just test-driven development, right? With a new hat. But the point is that, like, you have a structured way of going about things, and the writing the code part is no longer lovingly handcrafting this beautiful mahogany table. The automated, you know, sander, mill, chainsaw is doing that for you. And right. So you are orchestrating something. And it's probably worth watching, I assume, a WWDC session that I've not gotten to about this topic, but it's about figuring out your plans. How are you going to validate that? And then how are you going to orchestrate the changes that it's doing? That's what that whole infrastructure, architecture was talking about.
Right.
Well, the other thing... That really is like the planning mode is what we're... Because I saw them show that, I think it was the what's new in Xcode or something, and there was like, you know, slash planning, and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, planning mode is something we're familiar with. Is it kind of their version of that? Is that what that is then?
It seems like it.
I think it was, because they even showed in the State of the Union, like, oh, I'm going to build this app with or for my daughter to, you know, make stories and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, I want it to do this thing. And it showed like, okay, here's the plan. They went in and edited the plan and said, okay, now go build the app.
Got it. Okay.
We're diving a little bit further down the road here. What are you guys... There's a couple of things. One of the rumors about the origami app that they use as an example is the idea that leads towards a folding phone or folding iPad. I don't know.
100%. There was a bunch of hint, wink, nudge, nudge.
The stretchable simulator is not enough of a hint.
I was going to say the device hub is exactly what I was going to ask you guys about. What did you think about... I don't know if you had a chance to play with it, Josh, on... I have Xcode 27 on my machine upstairs, but I haven't really poked around with it yet.
I've installed it on two machines and have opened it on neither, but the device hub sounds interesting, especially since I hear it not only is for your simulators, but also can connect to developer-enabled devices on your network that are not necessarily on your Apple ID. So that's going to be a big one for development on Work Macs.
Does that mean I can? Does that mean I can use my Vision Pro as a mirror display on my my Jobby Job Mac?
Which as is a not mirror display, I don't know, but as a device that you could build to, maybe. No.
I mean, I can do that now because I have the developer strap and I can just plug in the cable. But yeah, it's super frustrating at work when I can't put my Vision Pro on and get the big giant screen in front of me, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think the thing that was confusing me in related to this was where they said you can resize iPhone mirroring.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. iPhone mirroring is mirroring my iPhone, which means it's mirroring what should be on my iPhone screen.
Yeah.
So how do you stretch my iPhone?
I think if you could unfold your iPhone and make it wider, maybe that's.
Yes, I was going to say you're talking about mirroring the phone you have now, Josh. When this ships in September or October, it'll be mirroring the iPhone you will have then.
Yeah.
Which may or may not be wider.
Or maybe it won't
I don't
happen,
know why,
yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, so sort
of
cool stuff.
If you want me to have one of these foldable phones to prove this theory, please sponsor this episode.
Yeah, right. No, but I think it's like the Swift UI thing, right? It's their less than subtle way of saying, you know how we used to say don't make your interfaces for one size? Now we're saying,
yeah,
don't make anything for one size. Everything is liquid.
Yeah.
What was it? Auto-constraint? Auto-constraint hinted at the iPhone 5, I think.
Size
Something
classes.
Like that,
need,
yeah.
Need more size classes.
Right.
That's what Mark wants.
Yeah.
Well, size classes was 2014, I believe, in the year of the iPhone 6. Or no. It came in 2013, the year before.
Yeah. Should we talk about the curved circumference on the corners on macOS, which apparently drove people crazy?
Oh, my God, yeah. How much... This is right up there with my love of glass. Oh, talk about wasted space on a Mac. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, making everything uniform, pushing it back up to the edge. You know, I think maybe their intention was, let's do this. When they did it last year, it was, let's do this for the touchable Mac interface. That they then realized, oh, that's right, we're not shipping that quite yet. Because we did say no one would ever use one of those, didn't we? Yeah. But no, seriously, I got this thing about wasted space on an interface. And for me, that was just such a classic example, very much like the curved corners now still. So, yeah, push those controls back into the corner and leave them where they should be. That is it. Drop the microphone. I'm done.
Yeah, well, my microphone drop is I still don't like Windows on my iPad. Like, I just don't. I don't see the need for it. You know, I don't have a giant 13-inch iPad, but I don't need rounded corners. I don't need resizable windows on my iPad. I never have.
I only use that when I was using an external screen, and then, yes, okay, now it's useful. That said, I think I mentioned this before, I'm not sure. I don't have any iPads now. I traded in for a MacBook Air, so it's not a problem. Yeah.
Okay, right. That's sad. Okay. I mean, there's lots of different nitpicks we can talk about on the we've kind of delved into some of these things, like the new Xcode, things like that. What stuck out here for me? I mean, we have a new Reality Composer Pro 3, which only Josh and I maybe care about. There's been a lot of in the VisionOS community, a lot of people don't like Reality Composer Pro because it's not flexible enough for the sort of more sophisticated, heavier hitter apps. You know, if you have a lot of things in there, it's a place to compose and, I mean, set the stage for things. They do seem to have added a bunch more features into it. And I remember Reality Composer, notice I didn't say Pro, that ran on iPad, that let you do, you had, you know, there were automations and things like that in there that never really made it over to the Mac version. So now we have animated timelines. We can have there's a state machine now, so if you're doing a game kind of thing, you can have moving from one entity can move from one state to another. There's a little video on making a little character walk around and, you know, either stand idly or walk in one of the Reality Composer Pro sessions, I should say. And there's one other thing, just drew a brain fart on that one, but the other thing that if you listen to the last episode of the show, Christian was talking about how he rewrote the tool that they took away from us to create USD files, which are the sort of standard files on Vision OS. There was a tool that used to convert, you know, you could, it was always in beta, it was never really released, and seems to have disappeared. But then I saw today a video dropped called USD Kit, which lets you do some of the things that we wanted to do with these other tools that perhaps they took away. I watched a bit short video on that one. I think there's more to it than that. But anyway, just interesting that you know, we now have a USD tool to replace the USD tool that they took away 2 months ago.
There's a kit for everything now, I think, right? I will say, though, you know, as someone who makes games, every year I'm hopeful that I'm finally going to get a decent set of tools to make games in a less painful way. And so, like, the new Reality Composer sprite scene kit has been deprecated for, a couple of years at least now. Sprite kit still exists, which is just,
Is it the other way around? I thought scene kit was still around, but sprite kit's gone.
No, when I looked the other day, I'm sure it said SceneKit was still deprecated.
Oh, SceneKit. Oh, yeah, you're
right. Which was actually a surprise to me, because I thought the same thing, because SpriteKit is so awful for so many years that I thought the same thing. Was like, well, no, surely they mean SpriteKit. But what I was going to say was, because I watched the video the other day of the porting of Cyberpunk 2077, and how they were talking. I mean, I love that game, and it's a phenomenal on the Mac. It's absolutely phenomenal. But yet, we still don't have a good set of tools to do these things. Even, like you say, Reality Kit. And I just wonder, you know, it's like, Apple, when are you just going to give us a decent 3D tool that we can work with that is like whatever it is, Godot, Unity, Unreal Engine, something like that, and not have us go through this engineering, right? I don't want to be in engineering mode when I'm making a game or something like that. I want to be in creative mode. And I, like, if I'm wearing a Vision Pro and I want to create something in Reality Kit, you know, something like that, I want to move around it, do it in real time, poke things, move them around. I don't want to be writing lines of code that at some point will compile into something. So I always feel a bit disappointed every year when we see what they've done with these tools.
Yeah. Or they always sort of fall short when they're in the explanation. You're sort of putting pieces together. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, no disrespect intended to anybody, but I think that really is best when I describe it as, you know, if I'm doing something creative, I want to be in artist mode, not computer science mode, you know, and that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Which Apple is supposed to be really good at, right? I mean, that's the thing. Over the years, they do such beautiful work on design of software and hardware. And yet it's like, so what, why do you give us these tools?
Yeah. So let's talk about, you mentioned the labs, right, or the videos. I mean, did they drop all 100 sessions on Monday? And that's the first part of the question. But the longer question is, what sessions have you watched that you think were interesting?
So for me, I do believe they dropped, because I think they even mentioned it, that they dropped over 100 on Monday. I have done it the same way every year, which is I start with the what's new. Like, you know, let me see the carrots and then I'll pick which one to deep dive. So I've been going through those. I was going to make those my pick, actually. Just, you know, if you've had any Apple development experience, in my opinion, always dive into the what's new first, especially if it's some area that you use or you think you might want to use this year. So, I've been going through those, and nowhere, as is tradition, right? I think we all bookmark ones, knowing full well I'll probably watch about 1/3 of that list. But yeah.
Yeah, I went into the VisionOS ones primarily. I did do watch. I watched the What's New in Xcode, What's New in Swift, What's New in Swift UI. And I always watch the What's New in Swift one, and then about 3/4 of the way through, I'm like, I have no idea what these people are talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, this could have been here for years, for all I know, right?
Yeah.
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 Oh, you can do that now. Okay. Well, how about you, Josh? Have you watched anything so far?
I've done like Peter. I've watched some of the What's New videos. I also did, because I thought it might help me out, and it didn't help me out as much, the Code Along Make Your App Available to Siri. Hmm. It does cover APIs that are not necessarily new this year, but that can be relevant for taking your existing app and exposing it to basically all of the Spotlight and Siri and everything in there. So as that is literally the focus of Apple this year, if you want to have an app ready for OS 27 on whatever platform, I would say videos like that are going to be very useful to show you what you need to get yourself up to speed and to make your app as accessible to the system as possible.
Sure. And how about you? Have you watched anything?
Not a ton. I watched Keynote, I watched Platform State of the Union, and then I searched for, because I'm in the financial technology world, I look for Apple Pay, nothing new in Apple Pay. I was like, okay, did they do something new with Finance Kit? Because I've been keeping an eye on that for the past couple, no, nothing new. I was like, what about Wallet? Hey, there's something new in Wallet. It's nice, you know, like the generic passes and stuff. I'm like, okay, nothing really for the jobby job. So now I'm going to have to go through the what's new of like what's new in Xcode, what's new in Swift UI and Swift to just keep abreast of those. And like both these gentlemen have said, you know, move from there to figure out which direction I want to go, probably in some of the intents in, you know, agentic pieces that make a lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm. I'm disappointed that you didn't all dive in like I did then. And the first thing was, okay, show me the new theming tools in Xcode so that I can set my colors. Because that was like the first, I was like, okay, that's it. Xcode 27, I'm good. I can change the colors of things a lot easier. I'm fine.
I don't want to get excited about that until I can actually use it more for the day job. So maybe July. July is when I can kind of justify and do that.
There you go. Get the summer palette out, right? Yeah.
Yep.
I hate to tell you guys, I never changed the theme of my Xcode. I haven't since day one. And I still, you know, so except other than going to dark mode and when the sun goes down.
I'm excited just because with the theming, they said it can be per project. So
right.
I could have
that was cool.
Each
yeah,
of my
cool.
apps have their own theme in Xcode matching their icon color. So I will know which Xcode window is for which app when I'm working with it. I'm looking forward to that.
I need one that colors for each branch in Git so that I don't start working on the main branch and then realize I should have opened a new branch.
It's not a bad idea because you have folks that do, like Tmux, and they're really going across a variety of machines. And it's like, well, this one is development. It's fine if I knock something over. This one is red, so I know I'm in production and don't delete the database here kind of stuff.
Jaime, that's exactly what I use them for. So that when I SSH or VNC into a machine, I'm like, this is red. This is dangerous. It must be production. You know, that's exactly how I've done it for years. So yes, I'm glad I can. And the problem is with Xcode, though, is I'd be doing them all red because it's like, this is dangerous. Anything I do in Xcode is dangerous, right? Yeah.
Just turn all the warnings into errors. You'll be fine.
Yeah. You could do that now. Yeah. Just make everything
an error.
You could
do that before, too. You could do that before. It's weird. I jumped around. I looked at the build new generational experiences in VisionOS 27, obviously, because that's kind of where I'm looking at. And then Explore Advances in Reality Kit. Watch that one a bit. It talks about some really interesting gaming concepts. Seem to be pushing more towards gaming, Peter. Just so you know.
I hope so.
Well, I mean, the thing about is building a game for VisionOS, you need to know so many different skills beyond just writing Xcode, right?
And people keep asking me, like, when are you going to make your game for VisionOS? And I was like, well, when there's more than potentially three people.
Your game the other day, did I see your game the other day? It was like an alien ship stealing cows?
That's it. The cow abduction game. Mufu. Yeah.
Yeah, Mufu. Yeah. I mean, I my game is called Geese Squad, and it's basically like you fly along, you pick up other geese, and you form a chevron, and you fire poop at hunters. We don't have guns in our game, Peter. We have slingshots because guns are bad for kids, right?
Yeah. So, but you got poop in there, so, you know.
Well, the kids wanted to do the poop, right? So, like, it was designed by my grandkids when they were quite young, right? So they thought poop was just hilarious, right?
Yeah.
But you pick up eat maple sugar to make you go faster. You have butter tarts, which are a Canadian thing to get more geese. There's blueberries you pick up. All sort of Canadian themes, right? It's only the American hunters that shoot us at us, right? But, you know, that I've always thought about making a game where you could be like, you know, the landscape could be flying underneath you and you're flying with the geese, you know, kind of thing. But like, you'd have the geese beside you in a chevron, you know, you'd be like the lead goose or something. But your game's I kind of saw your game and I thought, okay, that would make a good Vision OS game, because now you could have a surface and you could be another friend of mine just did an alien spaceship thing where they fly around your room and you shoot them with rockets.
Okay.
Like with finger guns, right? You point your finger and you pull the trigger.
Like it. Yeah.
And it fires. I've managed to clear the level, but I don't know why or how I did it, to be honest with you. Because I'm not sure where I'm supposed to hit the alien spaceship on. But it's the same concept of your game, but on Vision OS.
Nice. People keep saying, like, oh, you should do Vision OS for this and that. And it's like, yeah. You're right. These would absolutely be great. And then I remember friends of mine who ported their apps to Vision OS and how they're still mad how many hours they spent on those.
Oh, never mind. I think development on Vision OS, we just proved it this week. I just did a 6-week project. The amount of man hours that goes into building something in Vision OS, there's so many things to be concerned about, right? Mm-hmm. Initially, when I went in, I thought, oh, this is an app that I could build myself. But thankfully, I had two other engineers working with me. One was a designer, so, you know, we kind of got a good POC done in 6 weeks. But yeah, I mean, who would have thought? And it's not three of us, because it's six of us, because there's three human engineers and three AIs. You know,
interesting. Yeah. I mean, you know, the vision. Let's just go, you know, the Apple Vision platform, be it the Pro or
glasses,
supposed glasses, goggles, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
This is absolutely Apple's perfect opportunity to take a new gaming approach and own it, you know, and I really want them to, mostly so it can justify me getting one and play games all day. Yeah. But
yes. We need you to have one. Yes,
exactly. Yeah. I'm that reality guy in the meeting. I know. But I do seriously, I think it's like Apple, this is your way to take it to Nintendo Switch, to take on, you know, claim it back from Steam a bit and so on. And I feel like they're missing an opportunity. So I really do want to see them embrace it.
Yeah, maybe the rumors about Vision OS being dead was all the journalists wanting to drive the market price down so they could afford to get one.
Good idea. Keep going, Jones.
Was it Vision OS being dead, or was it just the Vision Pro hardware line?
Being dead, yeah.
Because I can agree, if you can get the Vision OS into something more like glasses, that's going to be the thing to go for, and Vision Pro is going to be the Mac Pro of well, rest in peace, Mac Pro. It'll be the Mac Studio of the Vision line.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, though, because they're doing some interesting things this year people who are who need to drive wheelchairs, right? There's now an interface where they can use their eyes to, and they can see, obviously, where they're going with the Vision Pro, but they can use their eyes to navigate and you know, direct the chair to go faster, you know, left, right,
it's
whatever,
amazing.
Which is kind of cool. You can be, and now with the sort of, I guess, with the Siri integration too, the Siri AI integration, you can have it tell you what's in front of you, which would be awesome for someone who is visually impaired, right? Because, I mean, the Vision Pro it's an accessibility first device, for one. And the other thing is that, there's a third thought here, and it's stuck in my head because I need a Siri to tell me what I was trying to remember. But it's coming. I can feel it. It's there.
3 o'clock in the morning, you'll jump up and you'll shout something.
That was the thing. Yeah. Oh yeah, see it, there it is. So you can now take a physical flashlight and you can attach anchors to it, and you can point it to something in your room, and you can have it illuminate as if like the light's coming from this virtual flashlight. So you know, and so oh. And but the thing about it is what I'm looking around my room right now, I think I'm looking at the walls of my rec room here with the you know, heating pipes and the computers in front of me. But what I'm actually looking at is a video of all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Right, so mm-hmm. Now I can have a star field projected on all the surfaces of my room, which aren't really being projected because it seems to me and Josh like this is really happening. But Josh and I also both know it's happening on a screen that's like 3 millimeters away from our eyeballs.
Super close, yeah.
It's like a mini micro hollow deck that's like one eyeball in size. Yeah.
It's enough for me to get my pinky there between the lens and my eye.
Yeah, like I can my eyebrows can touch the front of my vision pro. But the thing is, like, because all this stuff I'm looking at is projected, and because all the surfaces are mapped with LiDAR, I can virtually project things onto them. Like, mm-hmm. I have like widgets over there on my furnace door. I've got a clock and mm-hmm. got my Now Envision app, and I've got my cameras, and I know how much battery juice I have. And but now you can put a widget on your desk too. That was another new thing that they came out with, kind of like a desk accessories. Going back to System 1 when we had desk accessories, right? But or maybe System 3, I think. The fact that you can interface real life with Vision Pro is cool. With Vision OS, I should correct myself, right? Because I mean, the Vision Pro is just it's the entryway, it's the gateway into this whole thing. I keep saying that Apple could put a chip in the back of my head and feed into my optic nerve and make me think I'm looking at you right now on a screen, because I think I'm looking at you on Zoom. But mm-hmm. really what mm-hmm. I'm looking at is a projection of you on my eyeball. I even see my hand here as I'm pointing it in front of you, right? I see my arm or my forearm and everything like that. But this isn't my hand I'm looking at. This is a video capture of my hand being projected on a screen 3 millimeters from my eyeball.
See, Jaime, this is what they do to me every time. Every time I get together with Josh and Kim, they end up convincing me, like, yeah, why don't
how,
I have
how many
one of
Vision
these?
Pros do you want to buy?
Yeah, exactly. They do it to me every time, buddy, I'll tell you. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, then I remember that I don't have the neck strain, and my eyeballs don't need batteries yet.
So Jaime knows that, and when I played hockey, you can't see it on the screen behind me because you can just see a hockey glove hanging there, but I have a goalie mask on the wall behind me, but I was a goaltender, and the goaltender mask is heavier than the Vision Pro.
Oh,
so I've had all this neck training for like 35 years, right? So nice. Plus, I also use a Nano Pro on the top of my head, which makes it cantilever off my forehead, because there are many things that we've done to our, and Josh and I, neither one of us are using our light shields right now. So we have peripheral vision as well, which is kind of interesting, right?
Which is why I'm ready for glasses.
It's like wearing a pair of glasses, like Josh was saying earlier today.
Yeah. And because of that, because I've got this blurred experience of seeing peripherally the real world and the virtual here, it is really hard when I take this off, and it's going to be hard after we've been talking for 2 hours, because I'm used right now to having Zoom floating in front of me, my messages window to the side of me. I've got the home app behind this so that I can just quickly look and turn on my office fan if I want to. And then I'm going to take this off and just like, where'd my windows? Oh, they're not real.
See, it's so disappointing.
It was all a dream. Yeah. It was all a dream.
That's it. You know, you thought you were Ready Player One, and then you come back and you're like, oh, yeah, this is reality. That's right. Yeah.
But at least I see the real world around here, so I can still see. Yep, my desk is messy.
There you go. Yeah. See? Yeah.
Yeah, my desk is messy, too. I mean, the one thing that in terms of visual acuity, that when I went to the first developer lab, I mean, like when I went to the first developer, I wrote a post, and Apple asked me to take it down. But my first problem with typing on the Vision Pro is you get this virtual keyboard floating in front of you. You used to have to push your finger through the keyboard in order to register a key, right? Now you can just, now you can almost touch type, right? But the thing that I'm holding up a can of pop, which you can't see in this hand here, but the thing is that you can put a straw into the hole in the top of the can, right? And there's no, your brain doesn't go, oh, I have to adjust my eye-hand coordination to make that happen. Apple's done such a good job. I'm selling you now, Peter. Apple's done such a good job on reprojecting your reality to the point where you think that, like when I reach for this can of pop, it's where I expect the can of pop to be.
Yeah. Oh, I believe it.
I've cooked with mine on. Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've cooked. I've been chopping veggies and everything. Yeah,
yeah, and that's why he's had to put the fake eyebrows on the avatar here and everything, right? Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the improvements is you're now looking at a Gaussian splat of our faces, right? Which is why we look much better than we did in the
version. Oh, it's so good. No, it really is so good.
And, yeah. I mean, and when I don't wear my Vision Pro and I show up on a Zoom meeting, people are like, who is that? Is that you? Are you wearing a Vision Pro? It's so much clearer now. I'm like, no, this is really me. But
it's
but
so fun.
But they added the glasses this year, right? So and they let you adjust them up and down. So I move mine down because this is where I wear my glasses on my face, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I don't normally wear glasses. I do it to look, you know,
cool
and hotter than I am. It's so funny. So the big Persona updates came with Vision OS 26 last year. Mm-hmm. And I hopped on a Teams call last year, and a coworker was just like, what Teams filter is that?
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's the $3,000 one.
Mm-hmm.
Don't remind me.
Now that is a DLC right there. Yeah.
Yeah, downloadable content for sure. Yep. Cool. All right. So we had a couple of, I think we have some picks, right? Well, we did our picks for, in terms of the thing. But Jaime, you had a poster you wanted to talk about? A couple, actually.
Yeah. I'll mention that I put the link in here for people who saw Eric the Architect do the music video at the end, Appreciation, where I'm not personally familiar with his music because I'm like not in that market. I assume the Gen Zs and the Gen Alphas know exactly who this person is, but he's singing about all of these various apps and kind of making it sort of fun for developers. So
I thought it was clever, but how many of us were sitting hoping to see the icon for our apps fly past, right?
Yeah.
Well, apparently there was an app wall at the thing, and I've
there was,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but show me the blue ones, because all my apps are in my corporate colors, right? I don't know if I've ever made it on the wall myself, but
I noticed that, actually. Most of that wall was blue, and I was like, okay.
No, they were changing colors. Like, I saw some yellow
ones. Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, because I was thinking...
It's like a floating river of apps. They've been doing that for years. Yeah.
Because I was about to change my icon to blue to try again next year. All right.
Yeah, don't bother with that. But it's funny because, like, I mean, I went to the Phil Schiller keynote where I went as a reporter, and it was Tony Bennett. So kind of lets you, Tony Bennett, nice. We had YouTube one year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so now we've got...
We got this guy,
Eric
this year, whoever
Eric
that was.
And how much of that do you think was AI? Because do you think he had a foam icon for every single person there, or was he just throwing green screen icons?
Oh, yeah, that's totally what it was, right? Yeah.
I want to say it was actual only because the lyrics had all of the names of the apps, so they knew what apps were there already.
Oh, yeah.
So it could have been actual print.
But some of them were floating above his head, though, right?
Yeah, some of them couldn't have been real. Yeah.
Well, never mind then.
However, the ones that are real, I mean, if you was that app developer, you would totally want to buy that thing from Apple, right?
Oh, yeah.
The clip?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah, it's like the Nutella thing floating on Artemis 2, right?
Yeah. Wait, you're saying that wasn't real?
Yeah. That was real. Jaime, what do you got for us from your pick?
Yeah, it is a Daring Fireball post about a Jason Snell post. The basic idea is that, isn't it interesting that Mac app development, like native Mac app development, not Electron, not this or that, that just like, yeah, whatever, kids, I hit the distribution target and said, here, fine, get out of here, here's your Mac app. Actual Mac apps have been on a resurgence because presumably because of agentic development, we're like, yeah, bro, I don't know how to make a Mac app, but like ChatGPT does, Gemini does, Claude does.
Yeah.
So is that a good or a bad thing, right? Because I'm thinking it's a great thing to see more, even more apps coming to the Mac. However, I'm also thinking, yeah, that means there's going to be more junky apps, right?
Yes. And so I do think that, so I will disagree with John Gruber here, who says, you know, regarding the state of Mac app development, it wasn't moribund, but it was stagnant. I'm like, no, dude, it was absolutely 100% dead. You cannot name a Mac app that anybody cares about in like a year, 5 years, 10 years. How far back do we need to go? Mm-hmm. Everything that you do on Mac is probably a web application.
Oh, really?
Right? Outside of dev apps, I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's like, name one. What was the killer app that like you would need Mac OS? And so I agree with you, Peter, that like there's absolutely going to be a ton of slop and there's going to be a bunch of abandonware. But I look at it as like it was zero before. Now it's hopefully tens of thousands. And if that shakes out to like 10 really good ones, I'm like, hey, that's better than zero.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like the joke the other day someone was doing, and I'm not implying this is slop. You know, we all know the fantastic panic applications from years gone by, right?
Yeah.
And that they had brought out finally a new transmit for Mac beta, and everyone was joking like, oh wait, isn't that games company, they're making apps now, you know. And I was like, yeah, how sad that it's funny but true. You know.
Well, to be fair, my kids have no need for any of their apps, but they love Untitled Goose Game.
No, who doesn't, right? Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah,
there you
go. Cool. All right, well, let's wrap it up here. Jaime, people in touch with you, where will they find you?
I'm on Instagram as @devwithahair.
Right, and you can see how it's spelt there on the tile. Josh, people in touch with you, where do they find you?
They can find me with my username, Josh Rock, on socials, wherever. I don't know, wherever. I don't know. This is my Zoom window, that one. Okay. Yeah, okay, yeah. Right there. Yeah. Or at my website, joshespad.com. That's pad with two D's, because I'm a Trekkie. Live long and prosper. That still doesn't look right on the vision.
Peter?
Yeah, you can find, you know, like the real me, right? You can find me at peterweirdom.com. That takes you off to links of all the other things, podcasts and apps and so on.
Cool. All right. Well, my name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra. I'm on the Mastodon. I'm on the Blueski. I'm on Threads. There's a Canadian one called A, which I'm on. And I'm also on Substack. And I am on LinkedIn, but you have to try and find me there. It's a game. So until next time, we will see you all in the future. Bye.
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 This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at morethanjustcode.com. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends, leave a comment on the website, or write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We'd love to hear from you, so use the hashtag AskMTJC and we may mention you on the show. Friends of the show can also join us on the podcast Slack channel. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Every dollar pledged helps a lot. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, Josh, you were pointing. It's replaying your finger thing. You're pointing at the right side now.
Okay.
All right. So let me see if I can figure out how to stop this thing from, unless we're doing an after show.
So I'm watching the live stream as well. Yeah. I turned it back on.
Okay.
So
yeah, it says two people.
This is
watching.
A new thing that we have to do.
Yeah. So what does a live stream post show look like?
We were
This is where the live stream says, actually, I stopped 10 minutes in. Yeah. Yeah.
Was I supposed to be recording?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You never said if you were, you never answered the question. Did you want HD, SD, low key?
Yeah. Okay. So how do we stop the broadcast? Stop the train. I want to get off.
So I assume the little YouTube drop down probably has an option on your side, right? Or you go through the web app.
Oh, yeah, there's a stop button here. Let's see. Stop.
No, there is no stopping it. This is now the MTGC live stream network.
Well, this is the audio podcast after show, so that you're on.
So it looks like
the video is now a 24/7 live stream.
Yeah.
So we just we're like that camera that's in in Africa at like the watering hole, and
it
just picks up random developers coming by.
I'm gonna go chase a gazelle in the backyard in a second. Yeah.
We just wait. There's just a camera sitting there, and then you see a shadow coming in, and like, ooh, it's a developer coming in to do a unit test.
That's it. Yeah. Well,
we're still live on the show. Let me turn my volume up. Where's the volume's over here. Where's my cursor?
So we're still live, even though it doesn't say YouTube in the corner of my Zoom app anymore?
Yeah, doesn't it?
No, mine doesn't. No, it did, but now, yeah.
Mine never did.
Yeah, it says Facebook now. No, just kidding. Yeah.
Still shows as live, I think.
Yeah, well, I think we were up to three. Oh, I got a spinny beach ball. Hang on.
Uh-oh.
But I mean, on the recording.
I think the YouTube one probably lags behind. Like, I'm trying to think, when I do Twitch and OBS to Twitch and YouTube, I think YouTube is normally like 20 seconds, 10 seconds behind, something like that.
Yeah, so it's ended. The live broadcast has ended. So you were on Leo's show the other day. Is he using Brightside?
Riverside.
Yeah. Tammy and I are doing Riverside with her show. What's it called? Roundabout.
Yeah, I used it for a while. I like that I can pull all the raw feeds and then move them around in Final Cut and waste time in there.
What's nice about it is the people are on a client, but they don't. You have to tell them how to set their microphone up and all that kind of stuff, right?
Right. So, right. Yeah.
Handy. I mean, you look really serious.
Okay. I was just watching sort of the end there. I'm like, okay, so it is done, and it was like 2 hours and 27 minutes
on the thing.
Yeah, so you can use the same link that I had there.
Yeah, I think we were up to three people, so I think it must have been you, me, and one other person.
I told folks about it. Yeah. Obviously, I'm not an influencer. More of a go same. Away and leave me alone kind of.
If I was an influencer, I'd be making more money from my apps.
Yeah, the only thing I can influence people to do is ignore my apps completely. Yeah.
Definitely, I'm great at that.
Yeah.
Now, well, if I had... I mean, people have asked me to do it, like, you know, because they know we record on Wednesdays, and they've said, when are you going to do a live one? So I thought, well, here we are. But at least the good news is that now I'll be able to do the thing on Sunday for the fam damily, right?
Yep.
There you go.